If only we had this morning hours and hours to spend on this beautiful, moving, and very famous gospel story from John. I've spent so many years of my priesthood praying with this particular piece of text over the years for all sorts of reasons and reading about it and imagining the scene. And in fact, I've been blessed to stand in the spot where this story happened twice, actually, on trips to Galilee. So there it is on the shore, a very moving spot to be in. While there, God and I have had some very pointed conversations about life, you might say. So there's all that I could say, but we don't have hours. We only have a short amount of time. And so I guess, in the interest of that, maybe just one kind of, I don't know, summary sort of thought about it. Again, leaving behind so much that could be and should be said. To get at it, how about this? In terms of the context and the mapping out of the chronology of the story here, where we at in the whole sequence of things, it's hard to say exactly when this happened. We know it happened after the resurrection. That's clear. So Jesus has been raised. It might be before, might be after Pentecost. Just depends. John and Luke tell different versions of that story, but it's somewhere out there. So somewhere in the weeks, maybe a couple of months after his resurrection, we land on this scene. And we know that earlier in John's gospel, because we heard it on Easter Sunday and we heard it on the second Sunday, that Jesus has already been back to see them. And he has breathed on them, and he's given them mercy, and he has commissioned them to go out and to preach and teach and tell the entire world about himself. So he's done all of those things. Yet, it seems clear from this story that he's got to come back one last time. There's something that's just not quite tied up or dealt with or done. So he makes a special trip, you might say, to be with his closest followers one last scene, which we hear laid out for us this morning. What's going on? Something is not right in the community. Something is off. And it's off with their leader. Up to this point, after the resurrection, John, who stayed with him on Good Friday, who leaned his head in his chest on Holy Thursday, John has known who he was all the time. He recognized him right away in all the stories. He believed first, got to the tomb first. So John has been kind of leading the group in his heart, but they all know that he's not the leader. Peter is the leader. That's been made very clear up to this point, and the leader is falling short. He's just not able to pull it off. So there is this sort of tear in the fabric of the early church. Something isn't right. We also know this because of how the gospel starts. Peter says today, I'm going fishing, which is his way of saying, I'm going back to my old way of life. I don't think I can do this. I don't think I am worthy of, capable of the mission that God has entrusted to me, that the master left us. And because he's a leader, what do they all do? Well, they all follow him back to their old way. So they go back to Galilee, back north, leave Jerusalem behind, where the scene of the action is. They try and hide, and they do what they know best. They go fishing, because that's what one does. You go back to what you know, and as we see, they don't catch anything. It's a fruitless endeavor. So something is wrong. Peter's heart is heavy, and the community is suffering for it, and the divide between leadership and the beloved disciple is not, it's not working. Jesus arrives on scene, knowing something is up. First thing he does is he teaches them, he speaks to them, and he says, put your net over here, and they listen to him. So as soon as the word arrives on scene, and as soon as it's listened to, all of a sudden, fruit is born, fish are caught, things start to happen. So it is in the church. When God's word is alive in our hearts and we listen, things happen. When we don't follow his mission, well, not much happens. Peter realizes what's happening after John tells him who it is. Again, Peter doesn't see it right away. And he jumps in the water because he's ashamed. He's trying to hide, trying to cover himself with whatever he possibly can. He's not wearing any clothes. There's no bushes to hide in, like, say, in the Garden of Eden story, which this is a reference to. So he dives into the sea to hide from the Lord, doesn't want to face him, because he knows he's disappointed him yet again. And yet, there is the Lord with patience and understanding, inviting them to come to the shore where he's already standing. And what begins to unfold here now is what you might say simply a replaying of the problem. The problem is Holy Thursday night. The problem is Good Friday. And nothing's going to erase how those things happened, but what happened was that on Holy Thursday night, they all fled. And on Good Friday, they all fled, except for John. And Holy Thursday night, blustery, proud Peter, who was convinced he could save the Lord on his own terms, went with a sword in the garden, and then only minutes later, in the high priest courtyard, denies Jesus not once, not twice, but three times, around a charcoal fire, right at dawn, right after their meal they had just shared, right before Jesus is led by people away to be crucified. And Peter cannot get it out of his memory. I failed, I failed, I failed. The rest of the apostles, we failed, we failed, we failed. Jesus knows that. That's why the whole thing is coming apart. They don't know what to do with their past. So he replays the scene right here on the shore. This is what he's really doing. He sits them around a charcoal fire, like there was on Thursday night, feeds them, like he did on Thursday night, with the same kind of thing, bread, fish thrown in there too. And it happens at dawn, like when the cock crows at dawn. All of it is replayed. And then he gets to the critical conversation after breakfast is over with, and they're not saying a whole lot. He gets right to the point and says to Peter, "So, Simon, do you love me or not?" "Of course I love you." Head down. "Do you love me or not?" Twice. "Of course I love you." This is like a conversation around your dinner table, right? Sometimes with teenagers. Head down. Third time, "Do you love me?" "Yes, Lord. You know everything. I do love you." And each time, what does God say to him? "Do what you're supposed to do and take care of my sheep." "I'm fully aware of all that's happened, Peter. I know all of it. And I just want you to go on. You've been forgiven. Get over it." And so what does he do? He replays Thursday night and gives the apostles a chance to be healed at the root of the entire problem. Because God can do that. This is a great scene. And again, on we could go, no. But to think about this in a couple different ways. First of all, in today's world, in the stage, let's say, or the shoreline of the church writ large around the world and through history, this is a scene that replays itself over and over again. It's never done being reenacted. That is why the gospel writers and the church kept it, because they realized it for the gem that it was, for their understanding. The church is always, on one level, off the rails. We have been from the first days. The leadership doesn't get it then, doesn't get it now. The pope fails then, the pope fails now. Bishops fail then, bishops fail now. Priests fail. We, as disciples, we fail. And how often is it the case in life that we just have a hard time getting over it? So what does God show us? He comes on the scene now, just like he does back then, and says to us all, "I know all about it. Keep going. You are forgiven. You will do your penance as you must do, church and leaders and whatnot who have failed, but nonetheless, keep going. The mission is not done. It's my church," he says, "and you all work for me, and I know who I picked, and I know what you can and can't do." So he plays this out in our own day and age all the time. Every generation of the church must come to grips with the fact that its leaders and disciples are not quite up to the task. And God says, "I am fully aware. I love you anyway. Let my mercy seep deep into you and keep going." The scene plays itself out too, I think, probably in family life and in parish life and in marriages and at work and in school and any time that vocations just seem to be too much for us. Maybe it's true that there are times in life when, like Peter, we kind of find ourselves saying to God, "I'm just not quite sure I'm up for the mission that you've given to me here. These kids that you gave me, I don't know if I can handle them. Take them back. This marriage that I'm in, this husband or wife that I have, I don't know that I can do this. I've really messed up here." Or whatever the story is, "I'm not worthy of this. I can't do this." Happens to pastors. Happens to parents. Happens to doctors, nurses, lawyers, students, teachers, police officers. We all have our days where we go, "I just don't think I can do this." And God says, "Yeah, I know that. And I call you anyway." So this scene gets replayed out in the quiet of our prayer. Who in life wouldn't like a do-over sometimes, huh? That's what he gave the apostles. It's like a do-over. The whole scene, it's brilliant what he does, right? And yes, you can't take away Holy Thursday and Good Friday. What's done is done. Our past is our past. But he can, in conversation with us later on, heal the heart that's still broken from it. So we can go on, we can learn from it, like men and women must do who are mature in life, no? So the scene is our scene, I think, sometimes in life when it seems like we just don't belong. God says, of course you do. I know, I know. Do you love me, he says. We say, of course. Well, that's enough. And lastly, the scene plays itself out in our world, too, in a sacrament, in confession. This is what the confessional is for. God does not find himself bound by time or space. He's above time, which means that in a confession, when one comes to the priest and confesses what's been wrong in the past, God heals it in the past. Mercy heals it at the root. He can go back in time and sort of do that. And the past is still the past, but at least the heart has been healed, just like in this entire scene. So this is a way of saying that confession is given to the church and her members an essential tool to keep the church renewed over and over again, because we keep messing up over and over again. It's just what's going to happen. And so he says to us all in the sacrament, I hear you, I know you, I love you, I forgive you, it's been healed. Now on you go. Do-over is done. No? So more we could say, okay? Ultimately, as I always say, the goal here, I think, should be for all of us, because we need more time for this passage, to just pray with it. Sit at home with it a little bit and just read the lines and put yourself in Peter's shoes or the Lord's shoes or the apostle's shoes and just hear the Lord ask you and me the question, not once, not twice, but three times, one for all the denials of life, do you love me? And we want to say back to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And in that conversation, he says to us, then feed my sheep. In any state of life that you're in, they all need feeding, they need tending. Live the mission and do what I've asked you to do. And don't worry about how it's all gone before. You must go forward. The church must go forward. Your families, the parishes, the culture, the community. Forward in grace. Forward in grace. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I do. And feed my sheep and always follow me.